I placed a bet yesterday that the Lions would win the Super Bowl next year.
What were the odds, man?
It was like 126 to 1. Welcome back, everybody, to the Mitts and Twigs podcast. Here we are again, coming at you live. Tyler from his dungeon, me from my shoebox apartment. How you feeling today?
I'm feeling good, man. I was going to start off with just a good you, but then I realized I probably shouldn't do that. Keep a little more professional. But yeah, I'm doing well, you know, living the dream. Flames are rolling. Hockey's good. Everything's going well, man. How are you, Maddie?
Doing well, buddy. Yep. As you can see, I'm a little bit excited for tomorrow. We'll talk about that a little bit more later. Those that are just audio listening, I'm pointing to my Detroit Lions, Matthew Stafford, number 9 jersey. But yeah, we'll get into that a little bit later. I do appreciate you not going with the good you. We'll save that for somebody else's podcast, maybe. Coming off the All-Star break, we've got some fun news for everybody to talk about. First and foremost, the coaching carousel is in full movement. We've got a new man in Edmonton. I'm kicking myself because I realized I didn't write down the guy's name.
Woodcroft.
Okay. Is this exciting or is this, what is this?
This is a much needed move, and it's actually it's a weird move by Ken Holland in the sense that this isn't the move that he usually makes with struggling teams. He doesn't usually fire the coach or blame the coach. It also is interesting. I thought the guy that would replace Dave Tippett, if this sure did happen, would be Glenn Gullitz, the former Flames head coach. But they went with Jay Woodcroft. He's been in the organization since Todd McCullum came. He was an assistant coach with the San Jose Sharks, followed him to Edmonton. He's won a championship at the AHL level with Bakersfield, you know, last year in a COVID-shortened season, but still, that's a huge accomplishment at any level to win that championship.
Yeah.
I think it's just a fresh change. I think this team, you know, you have Connor McDavid, who scored, like, before yesterday, he added, I think it was 2 or 3 5-on-5 points. He was 27th in the league, 5-on-5 points. Wow. And he was 78 points per 60 minutes, 5-on-5, which is, you know, not where he should be. Also, a little fun stat, here. Johnny Gaudreau's first. Just saying. Love it. But staying on Edmonton. I think this move needed to happen. I think there needed to be a shakeup, and they really need to see what they got. The other thing, I don't know about you, Maddie, is, cool, they did a coaching change, but their defense is still terrible, and they still have 42-year-old Mike Smith playing in net, and you can't address those holes in the regular season. You have no cap flexibility. The other teams aren't wanting to move their players. Like, the player that Edmonton's really interested in is none other than UFA Ville Husso out of St. Louis. You think St. Louis is going to move that guy? No, St. Louis is not going to move that guy. So really, you're stuck with what you got, and the coaching change is nice, and you'll probably get some wins out of it. But I still don't think they're a playoff contender team, which is kind of a shocker with the amount of talent they have in their top six. But yeah, how about you? What do you think about this whole coaching change in Edmonton?
I mean, it feels like the writing was on the wall for a while now. No disrespect to Dave Tippett. It just didn't really seem like it was working. And we've talked about it a bunch. I think Ken Holland's scrambling to save his job. I think he's been doing that for most of this calendar, for hockey year. I don't think this is going to do it. I don't know. I don't know what to make of this. I really don't, because I look at this situation and I don't think they even signed him to an interim deal, right? Like, he's
head coach.
He's head coach. So yeah. What's the idea here? Like, you know, if he doesn't turn the team around, if they miss the playoffs, you're gonna be what Montreal does and have three coaches that you're paying at the same time and a couple of GMs that you're still paying at the same time. We'll get to that a little bit more in a minute, but this is my issue with it is they clearly need something. They need a shakeup. Like you pointed out, the goaltending still is not there. The defense isn't quite there. Their best in the world talent isn't really playing to what they can play to. And the GM isn't willing to, you know, really spend the price, spend the amount that it's going to cost to make changes for this year. So I guess for the most part, I'm this is met with apathy for me because I still think that their season is basically lost. I don't think they're in any better position going into next year. You know, was it Koskinen comes off the books? I think somebody else comes off the books, but Nurse's new deal kicks in. So they're not necessarily going to have a ton more cap space to open up. They're still in this bad position. So I don't know. I feel for the Oilers. They do have some incredibly talented players, but I think their team is still on this track of they're not going anywhere.
Yeah, it's a weird, and I don't think this is Ken Holland's move. And I also don't think it's the owner, Katz. You know, I don't think he's banging on Ken Holland's door to fire the coach. I think Elliot Friedman said it best the other day. I think you have players, you know, they're in that room. They're looking around. They're like, something's got to change. Something's got to happen. I think you have other executives in that league, in that team and organization that are like, okay, I get that we're holding true to our, you know, to who we are and who we've hired and all that, but like something's got to change. And I'm sure Katz has said, hey, so what's the plan here? You know, I'm paying a lot of money to a lot of really good players that this team should be winning. This team should be developing. This team should be progressing. And we're not, we're just flat. And it comes down to, like you said, and like you stated, Ken Holland. Kenny, you were okay with paying for Andrew Othanasiou 2 second round picks. You were okay trading a solid D for Warren Fogle and Ethan Bear. You were okay with overpaying and even taking on that cap of Duncan Keith. And then you decided it was a smart idea, knowing that you're already in cap hell, to overpay Darnell Nurse a year before he even hits UFA, over $9 million. I'm just looking right now. I think what it was, so they have to sign, yeah, Jesse Puljujärvi, Kyler Yamamoto, Ryan McLeod, Tyler Benson, who's a solid prospect. All new contracts next year. And I think they have, like, after that deal that comes in, under $5 million to do that all. Plus, you need to address your goaltending?
Yeah.
Yeah, what? I don't know how that happens. Yeah, you signed Ryan Nugent-Hopkins to a sexy deal. Works out, you know, it's a real cap-friendly deal. He wants to stay in Edmonton. Who are you moving out? Because before that, you just overpaid for Zach Hyman. He was supposed to be the answer. You got him playing, what, third line with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins. That's awesome. You know what I mean? You just stole Evander Kane, who actually has played okay. But he's not going to be playing for you next year for 1.5 mil. You know what I mean? Like, it's a weird situation. And I don't know what Ken Holland's going to do because he's said it on the record. He said it a bunch to reporters. Yeah, we're not looking to move our first round pick. We're not looking to move our second round pick. We're not looking to move our top prospects. But okay, well, how are you going to improve this team? I don't see a roadmap with Ken Holland right now. I think he just wants to stay pat and hopefully everything works out. Well, you're in year 7 and 8 of Leon and Connor. They're not going to want to just stand pat. They've stand pat for how long?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a weird situation. I am happy for Jay Woodcroft, though, because he always has seemed like the coach that's ready to take that next step. He worked under Todd McClellan for a lot of years, all of his years in San Jose. He worked with him in Edmonton. Then he went down to AHL when Todd got fired, and he's done well down there. He's had 3 winning records. So, yeah, I'm happy for him. But is this the change that they needed? No, what they needed to happen in August and July last summer. That's what needed to happen. And they didn't address that. They thought Zach Hyman would solve all their problems. Guess what? He hasn't. And that's the reality we're in.
Yeah. Moving on to possibly an even sadder situation is the Montreal Canadiens. I just want to throw it out there. I'm a fan of Martin Saint-Louis, and I want nothing but the best for him in his professional career. But I don't understand. I don't think that this hiring makes sense in any other market other than Montreal. And I don't think that it makes sense in terms of a great decision. But I understand it in the context of Montreal. I don't understand putting a guy that has no professional coaching experience in mid-season for a team that's still in single digits wins, that is kind of in limbo already. You know, I don't understand. If you want to bring Martin Saint-Louis in, I feel like you do that in the off season. You give him a full off season to build. If you do truly believe in him, and there's a lot of people that spoke up in the media and former players, former coaches that have spoken up on his behalf in a very supportive manner. I get that. Maybe he is a natural leader enough that's going to work out.
Yep.
But do that in the off season. Give him a chance to build his team, do everything. Don't throw them in there mid-season. Throw an interim tag coach in there. Just finish off this dreadful season, because there's nothing to salvage this year for them.
No.
I don't understand. I don't see the point. Bring him in as a special advisor. Bring him in some way, but don't put him in here mid-season at the All-Star break. It just creates a weird environment to me, and I don't think he's gonna be successful. I think this is just more of the same of this guy knows a bunch about hockey and everybody loves him. Let's bring him in.
Yeah, the Martin Saint-Louis hire did it catch me off guard? Hell yeah. It's also should send fan base as a little reminder that if your owners are offering, you know, your below average head coach that just won a whole bunch of series because he had a good goalie, and they also won a third round with him not even being there on the bench, they probably shouldn't offer him a contract extension, right? Montreal's made some really weird decisions the past 12 months. In the sense of hockey ops and all that. I like the Jeff Gordon hire. The Kent Hughes one is a little bit, you know, it seems like what I've heard is people love it and he's a really well-respected agent and he should do well in Montreal, but still a strange hire. And then you come down to the Martin Saint-Louis. I listened to the press conference and I loved what he said about structure and playing under that instead of just playing like one certain identity. And it was really interesting. And if I can, I'll link the clip also into like this video so you can hear it at right about now. And what he talks about is awesome. And I think it's really clear that he does have a passion for coaching and he wants to take the step. But like you said, could you imagine being a head coach or an intern head coach, because they don't even know what he's going to do at the end of the year? Right? It's literally just a sample. Like, hey, do you like this? Maybe we'll hire you. That's what it is. It's like, Martin, tell me if you like this, because that's all it is. But now you're learning on the fly with a team that has 8 wins, clearly looking to rebuild and sell everything. Why do you want to progress this year? You're looking to move all those players out. You want that Shane Wright pick, right? I don't know why you want to pay, like you stated at the start of this episode, 3 head coaches. That's a lot of money for head coaches that aren't coaching on your team. And now you're giving it a whirl with Martin Saint-Louis. I love Martin Saint-Louis as a player. The guy's been, he's a rod. Team Olympic Canada, you know, they hooped him. So I'm happy for him. And he seems like he's got a passion, but it is, like you said, a very, very strange hire. It's a very strange contract. It's a very strange everything. And Montreal, we all thought it was going to be Arizona at the bottom of the league, right? It's Montreal. And that's all. So if you could be worse than Arizona, that's something.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that it's like you said, it's so crazy that they signed Ducharme to a long-term contract when so much of last year's run, you can objectively look at it and see that it wasn't because of him. like he was a part of it, you know, but it's not like, oh wow, he really did this, he really did that. It's he was just on the bus with the rest of them with the Carey Price show, and guys are playing well, and Shea Weber, but Shea's not there. Carey's not there. Team is hot garbage.
Hot garbage.
It's, yeah, it's, and you even get the sense that with their offseason moves a little bit, the way that they handled it after contending for the Stanley Cup, you get the impression that they weren't convinced that was anything but an outlier, you know? And so, yeah, it's, I guess, more strange moves for a franchise that has been very, very, making very many strange moves the last 12 months. Rudderless, I think, is the best term that I can come up with for them. And just, yeah, it's interesting. It's wild. I said, both of us have stated, we love Martin St-Louis. Don't want to see him fail by any stretch of the imagination. Just don't see, this doesn't feel like he's being put in a position where he can succeed. You know, maybe he will, but he'll have to overcome quite a bit. Then again, maybe that's just going to be another Martin St-Louis story where he overcomes all the doubters and all the things that are had against him. I don't know. Yeah. But you go in there with no pro coaching mid-season to a locker room that is probably just the most unhappy, depressing place right now. Man, I don't know.
Yeah, you hope you can't even be like, man, there's just got to be this level of losing like in Buffalo, right? Where there's just this thick fog of losing that you walk into every day you open. You can't even say that because it's only been a short period of time, but it's been such a fall from grace, like this huge fall from grace. Montreal hasn't been a Stanley Cup contender in a while. Well, I guess they were last year, but even that was an outlier. Like you said, like they just got out. They out goalied teams and they out, you know, forechecked a few teams, but they got, you know, lucky, but they were still a solid team. They were still solid. They were nowhere near the bottom. This is such a fall from grace. And I don't know if you want to call it, you know, karma for some things that they probably shouldn't have done in recent years, you know, drafting and all that kind of stuff. You can say that. And I can say that. And as sports fans, we can say that. And I'm okay watching it a little bit, but it is weird. And it is crazy. And I wish Martin St. Louis nothing but the best of luck, my guy.
Yeah.
Stuttered there, didn't I?
Fingers crossed for Martin. On to some more exciting hires, some more positive hires. Vancouver Canucks are going to be, you know, they're part of history now. They hired two assistant GMs. Both women, we got Cammy Granato and then Emily Castonguay. Emily coming from being the first female NHLPA player representative to now being the first. She was technically the first AGM in Canucks franchise history. Very shortly after, Cammy Granato, gold medal winning Cammy Granato. Got to put the respect on that name. She came over from the Kraken franchise, where she was the first female pro scout. This is really exciting. I think this is what we want to see more of in the game. These aren't like just done for the look of it. These are hockey minds. These are smart people. And this is, and representation matters. Like, it's important for people to see women with especially great backgrounds in both hockey, both of them former players, and education being put in these roles instead of the GM's golf buddy or, you know, somebody that so-and-so worked with at another franchise, just bringing all those friends along with him. I think this is so important. Obviously, I'm not alone in that. There's a lot of that going around. And it's great to see. I think it's overdue. It's exciting. I'm really happy and positive. I think it's really positive for the game of hockey.
Yeah, good on Jimmy, eh? you know, he came in and he's, and like you said, these aren't optic hires. They're not just hiring a bunch of girls to, you know, spin the media and the narrative that look at, oh, look how progressive these guys are. These girls deserve this. These women, sorry, deserve this. They deserve to climb the ladder in professional sports and, you know, have these ranks and these positions. It's not because they don't know what they're doing. They definitely know what they're doing. Look at their history. Mm-hmm. This is what happens when you bring in a solid president. You know what I mean? They hired Jimmy Rutherford, right? The guy has won at every level he's been at, and everywhere he's been, he's won. And he had a plan in place, and he did that. You know, it also started with the Bruce Boudreau hire. If you've been, and I get it, like it happened here in Calgary when they brought back D. Soots, right? Like they're like, really, you're going to bring this guy back? And these guys know what winning is, and they know what a good organization should be, and they know this kind of stuff. And you know what? Good for Jimmy to be able to open that door to these two, you know, high ranked women professionals. And you know, it's awesome. I have a young daughter. This is sweet that you can get to that level now. It's awesome to show that, hey, look at this, like this management group isn't just a bunch of hockey guys, isn't just a bunch of old retired players.
Mm-hmm.
These players know, like, and she is, Cammy Granato is, right? Like, good for her, but this is awesome. I'm so happy. And I'm not just happy because they, you know, because it's women that got hired. I'm happy because it's women that deserve to be hired. That's right. Right. It's not just because they just threw two random girls in there, women in there. It's they deserve to be hired and they deserve that position. So good on them and good on the Vancouver Canucks for being the first team to really do that. So awesome.
Yeah. I think that's such, it's what it is. It comes down to is, when you're only hiring out of a small group of, you know, let's put a say a plainly, a bunch of old white guys that have already been in hockey and hockey management, for when you're only hiring from that same group, this is why, you know, you see the same old crap done. This is why it's easier to build these cultures of silence that kind of propagate the abuse and the toxicity. You got to bring in fresh voices. You got to bring in fresh points of view, people with different backgrounds, different experiences. Increasing the base of people that you're willing to hire from can only benefit. Mm-hmm. And like I said, you've got a young daughter. It's important for people to see people that look like themselves in roles to understand that they can do those things. You know, and yep, that those things are available to them. That's, you know, I think it's great. I think it grows hockey. I think it's, especially given how much and how hard the Blackhawks have worked to drag hockey down this year. And, you know, for the last however many years, I think it's a welcome, refreshing, positive story to come out. So, Thank you, Vancouver Canucks, for doing something that we can be proud of this year. As there's been not a lot of opportunities to say that.
Yeah, I didn't.
speaking of things that I don't think anybody's proud of, the Coyotes. Hopefully that didn't get picked up, because I don't want to have to clip that out. The Arizona Coyotes have formalized their intent, their deal with ASU to play next year at the university. There's a lot to get into about that. Ty, I'm going to give you just a chance to speak on it a little bit. I know how you feel about it, but I want you to have a chance to speak on this before we say any more.
Yeah, I guess good on the Arizona Coyotes. They got what they're going after. And I'm confused because there seems to be on Twitter, there's a lot of support for this and it makes no sense to me. So you have a 5,000 seat arena that doesn't actually seat 5,000 people. Before COVID, the Coyotes were having roughly 14,000 people at their game. That's a lot of money you're losing just on ticket sales. ASU has already told them they're only going to make money on ticket sales, game day ticket sales. No concession, nothing like that. Okay, that's a lot of money you're missing out on. Again, no concession. I tweeted this out earlier this week. Thank God for revenue sharing, because that's the only way the Arizona Coyotes can do this deal. Also, what doesn't really make much sense is this isn't even guaranteed for next year. What happens in March and April when the vote for the Tempe arena falls through? Are they still going to want to play at ASU with no arena? So now you're going to stay there for 4, 5, 6, 7 years? No, something it just does not make sense. And I get it, Gary. I get it. You love Arizona. You love it. I love Arizona. I've been there a couple of times. It's beautiful. City's a bit older. Weather's gorgeous. Golf courses are pristine. It's very nice. You can't grow the team down there. Sadly, you can't. You're about to bring a bunch of kids, it's kids because they're rebuilding, into a college environment. Like, some kids are playing in the WHL, OHL, and college level. Their arenas have more fans. More fans. Like, I think I saw a Spit and Chicklets tweet that it was Grinnelli, I think. He was like, oh, I love this. And then he subtweeted or retweeted. He said, okay, I love it for me, but maybe not for the NHL. It's going to be great. Yeah, the environment's going to be awesome, but we're not here to have a college environment. This is a professional sports team. I don't know. I think it falls through, and it's going to be interesting. I don't want to say too much because it can change so much late March, early April with the Tempe vote, and to really figure out what that happens. If it does, if they do get that stadium in Tempe, okay, I understand it a bit more. But say it doesn't happen, yeah, sell the team. Put it up.
Well, that's where things get interesting. Quickly, I just want to talk about first, that would be for, I think, the 25-26 season is what they're looking at.
Yeah.
So the ASU agreement is until then. The Coyotes are going to have to, and by the Coyotes, obviously we mean the NHL, is going to be investing $20 million into the arena to get it up to standard for an NHL, which we talked about previously. There are certain things written contractually that gym facilities, locker room facilities, etc., that have to be brought up to this. So, you know, I think this is, you know, great for ASU. I don't believe that's a university that's struggling for money, but who doesn't like free money and free good stuff? But this is where it gets really interesting. And I think it was Elliot Friedman was speaking on this on Twitter, or somebody else retweeted around. But I think even he was quoting Jeff Merrick that this is all really contingent on that vote in March, April. And the thought and possibility is that if the Tempe Arena gets voted in and that deal gets accepted, then they spend a couple of years at ASU until that's ready, and then they move over there. And, you know, that experiment, that whatever it is going to be pretty interesting to watch. And I would really hope that they dive into it and they create a unique experience instead of just having a small whatever. You know, maybe it'd be really intimate. It can be like candlelit ice hockey, you know, like romantic evening, a couple thousand fans. But if the arena doesn't get approved, then I guess the Coyotes aren't actually technically legally bound to play in ASU at ASU. And at that point, there's possibility that they may basically take the franchise from Arizona. And I can't remember the wording of it, but I think that if that falls through, then essentially there is no future in Arizona. The league will take back the franchise, and it will be sold to somebody else. And at that point, you would have to assume it's moved. There are a couple of cities out there, particularly in the U.S. I know, obviously, Canada as well, but in the U.S. that they would love to put a team in, given the opportunity. Houston, I think, is one of them, Kansas City. But yeah, I think the ASU thing is a Band-Aid, and it's a Band-Aid to bridge them over to this Tempe deal. But I don't think that I think that this is on their last legs. Like, if this doesn't come through, I think they're playing somewhere else entirely next year. But yeah, I think that gets really interesting. We'll see.
How many last legs can a certain franchise get? Don't you feel bad for Atlanta and Winnipeg and Quebec? Like, don't you feel awful? I will say this, like you said, you're like speculating on where the next team would be if this Tempe deal does not pass and it does not get approved. I don't think it's ever coming back to Canada, especially during this whole COVID thing with, like, you know, the border and the restrictions and all that. I just can't see it coming to Canada, sadly, because that's where I would love it. Like, Quebec City deserves a team. I think that fan base is dying for a team. Saskatchewan would be sweet. There's
Hamilton. Hamilton should have a team.
Hamilton would be sweet. Yeah, like, there's lots of cool teams that should, like, in cities that should have a team. But sadly, I don't think that's Gary's MO, right? It's going to stay in the States, and that's where he probably wants it. The professional teams in Canada are bringing in enough revenue. This whole situation is just wild. It's just wild to me. And you're wrapping your head, your mind around it as well. But when you were saying that if this Tempe deal does not go the way they hope it goes, that the NHL would probably have to buy back, or they would have to buy the franchise from Arizona and to auction it off to the like, that could be interesting. Like, it could be like, remember when Amazon was, you know, auctioning off cities to put their warehouses and their, that's what we could have here, where they're like getting huge tax write-offs and all this stuff and super illegal. Oh, I'm not on roll today, but like, it could get wild and it could be interesting, but sadly, I don't think it's coming to Canada. And it sucks for Arizona because I think for a lot of years, it had very poor ownership, had no identity. It did well under, you know, it did well when the NHL owned it and Mulroney was the GM, and, you know, Tippett and Mike Smith were good, but yeah, I don't know. It's going to be fun.
I'm going to tip my cap to a guy who is retired this now. A lot of people thought he was retired up until recently. And now he is officially retired. We spoke about it in a cheeky manner not that long ago. It was no disrespect to him. It was mostly to try to get a rise out of our guest. I want to tip my cap to Tuukka Rask.
Yeah.
A fantastic career. Seemingly all-around great guy. Beloved by his team. Maybe not so much by his fans, but Boston fans are... Well, I can't really use that language on the podcast because it's family friendly, but, you know, Boston fans are what they are. So underappreciated in his city, but probably really an all-time great at his position. Sad to see his career ended kind of like this. The comeback bid was pretty exciting. And I think even going into last season or coming into this season, we all kind of assumed that Tuukka would be back this year, that it was, you know, just about him getting healthy and the Bruins making it work financially. So it feels a little bit like, you know, the rug pulled out that unfortunately he's not going to be able to continue his career. So tip of the cap to him, nothing but respect and love.
Yeah. Joe owes you a sorry, and you were right. Just saying, that's our guest. Just saying, you were right. The bet. I can't remember what he offered, but there was something. I can't remember. I'll have to go back and listen to it.
Yeah.
But sucks for Tuukka. You never want to end on an injury, right? You never want your career to end on an injury. And sometimes in hindsight, I don't think athletes realize their bodies are not what they were when they were 25, 28, 29, right? Like that kind of stuff. But I do want to share this fun record for all our Leafs fans. Tuukka retires with the most career wins by a goalie drafted by the Leafs. So, you know, thank you, Toronto, for drafting him 21st overall. He leaves with 308 wins. He also leads the Boston Bruins in playoff wins and all that. But good on Tuukka. You'll always remember freaking out. You'll always remember Boston fans hating him, like you said, which makes no sense to me.
I love the idea that Tuukka is the winningest goaltender in Maple Leaf franchise history, yeah, never having played for them. He's also played a really big role in ending their playoff hopes on many occasions.
Yeah.
I think the only thing that's what we need to maybe towards the end of the season, we can put up a poll. Which fan base hates Tuukka Rask more, the Bruins or the Maple Leafs? I mean,
I think the Leafs should sign him to like a 1-day contract so he can like retire as the winningest Leafs goalie. You know what I mean? Drafted by that organization. I think that's smart. I'm just
he deserves to be retired amongst their other greats.
Put him in Leafs row. What do they call that row where they all get like little statues and a cute little jacket and row or something? I can't remember. I remember they did a few years ago, but yeah. Oh, that's awesome.
Oh man. I gotta stop doing that. The other side of the coin, a player that Bruins fans love and just about everybody else hates, Brad Marchand, also a record holder. He is the most, technically not the most suspended because other guys have longer suspensions, but he has the most suspensions of any player in league history, robbing Chris Pronger of his most prized record. I talked about this a little bit. I don't understand the idea that some people still think he's not a dirty player or you know, like a repeat offender. You know, this is who he is. You know, he had some statements about like how, yeah, it was a dumb thing to do, but I don't think defending himself, you know, which is not surprising, but this guy's a clown. This guy's a goof. He is insanely talented. That we can't take that away. Like he is one of probably the best 100 player hockey players in the world right now. That can be true. And he can also be a clown who, you know, probably should be suspended longer because this is ridiculous stuff. Like this is no place in hockey for the kind of silliness that he pulls off on the ice when he's not being one of the best players on the ice.
Yeah, he had to. It's a real smart play by Marchand in the sense that he knew that he wasn't allowed to play for Team Canada, but if he got suspended, he could jump on a plane and then go play in the Olympics for Team Canada. So smart play by him, and he had to do something so egregious that would get him at least, you know, a few weeks off. So now we're probably going to see him hopped on the ice with Team Canada jersey. And he's ripping up with a whole bunch of butts after they got defeated by USA last night. I don't understand how he's even justifying what he did, like in saying that there was no intent to injure. Bro, like earlier in the game, Dreyer was trying to pass a puck to a kid and you like hit the puck out of his stick. So you had something in your bonnet then. And then Sidney Crosby went to like do a change and you literally held him. And it was the weirdest play and not like, it was just awkward.
Yeah. And then
to top it off, you decide to punch Jari at the end of the game. Defenseless, he's not even looking.
Yeah.
The fight, yeah, I understand that. Intent to injure, you think all you players are wearing helmets. If you take a cheap shot with an elbow or a shoulder, you could really do something bad to that other person's career. And you think that your punch doesn't do the same to a defenseless goalie because he's wearing a helmet? Nah, Brad Marchand, you deserve the 6 games. I love you as a player. I would die to have you on a team if I was like managing or coaching, or even if I'm a fan. We have Matthew Tkachuk on the Flames, and I absolutely like love him. But no, there's a line, and sometimes you cross that line. And yes, you did intend to hurt him. I know you're saying you're not, but a sucker punch to a goalie is a sucker punch to a goalie. It's a sucker punch to any other player on the ice. And yeah, sorry. I don't feel bad for you. Nobody feels bad for you. You deserved it. And you deserve the suspensions you get. You've done some of the weirdest things I've ever seen in hockey.
Yeah. Nice.
I'm just saying. So it is what it is. But sorry, Brad. Yeah, you deserve the 6 games. I know you're appealing it, but you're going to lose. Gary's not even going to take that call. He's too busy dealing with Rocky Wirtz and all that Blackhawk stuff.
It's just so... I don't know. I can't help but feel like it's a waste. He's such a waste. Like, he's a waste of space. He is so talented. If you listen to him enough, you can see that he's intelligent. You know, he's not a moron. He's not like, these are all things like that. That's it. He's not just getting, you know, crossing his wires and going crazy. I reject that statement. I think it was Spit and Chicklets that was actually talking about that. I don't think they're doing a media thing where they're trying to do say thing or drive a narrative.
Yeah.
This isn't a guy that getting his wires crossed. This is a really intelligent guy that is understands where the line is and does his best to skirt the line and occasionally go over it, but just enough that he has some kind of deniability but he also has zero accountability. He takes zero accountability for his actions. And man, where is this going? This is a guy who is in the prime of his career, but kind of, let's say the back end of his prime. He's 29, I think 30 years old. So
he's 33.
Is he 33 really?
Yeah, Brad Marsh. He's up there.
Oh my God. So this is his best hockey is not ahead of him, shall we say. But he seems healthy enough and he's still playing at a high level. He probably has a couple of years easy left in him, barring anything crazy. I don't see this getting better. I don't think this is a guy. He talked about how he's changed his game and he tried to play that. This isn't who I am now. That may have been what I was, but people are now blaming me for the person I used to be. No, you're still that guy because you're still doing this ridiculous stuff. You're still habitually line stepping. And you're not fooling anybody. We all see you there. You've learned how to stay more on that side of the line, but you're still line stepping. And when I'm not going to say worried, I don't lose sleep over this, but when I think about this, I don't see this ending well for him. You know, I feel like he's going to be the type of guy that's going to end up being suspended for the rest of his career at some point, because this is a guy that as his hockey skill wanes, as his speed and his, reaction time wanes and the younger players overtake him, I'm going to assume he's going to start doing more and more of this clown stuff, because that's how he's going to be able to justify his ice time. He's going to be getting under their skin. He's going to be the rat. And it's going to just lead to him doing more and more extreme stuff where he's eventually going to cross the line too much, or he's going to incite something larger. And then we're going to hear about how he's so sorry and he never intended that. It's like, no, man, you've got to recognize that your actions speak louder than your words, and your actions are very clearly demonstrating your attitude towards hockey, towards others, and what you think of the rules. So I don't know, man. The guy's a great hockey player. He would have been on everybody's Olympic squad. He's appealing to suspension, so I don't think he's actually going to make it over there.
He's still going. I know it.
But man, I'm just tired of that. I was hoping that he'd kind of put that stuff behind him, but yeah, no, he's still got the emotional maturity of a 14-year-old. So I don't want to tell you, Brad.
I just find the whole thing weird in the sense that I'm okay with the Crosby incident, even though it's weird where he's holding him. Like, players do that all the time. Like, they, you know, you toe the line, you find out what you can and can't do, and the refs are not going to call it. I'm just not with the sucker punches. And like, it's a sucker punch. And I get it. Like, it's not like Todd Bertuzzi behind the back, you know, like, it's still a sucker punch. It's a goalie who's not even looking. And you clearly, I don't know what he did wrong. He was just playing his position and all that stuff. And yeah, I don't feel bad for you, Brad. Sorry, you lost some money. You deserved it.
Yeah, he deserves to lose a lot more money. Honestly, I was joking and tormenting some people, but I think that it should have been a lot more. Like, it eventually the suspension needs to be enough that he doesn't want to do that anymore, or teams don't want to encourage that anymore. You know, that's what suspensions are supposed to do. It's supposed to be about reforming, not just about punishment, because then it's a waste of time. So I don't know. It's like you said, it's a sucker punch. Yeah, it seems like everybody's okay, so that's great, but you never know. Like, you catch him off guard, he falls over, he hits his head. If he was just trying to give him a jab or to just, you know, goad him, you punch him in the shoulder, you punch him in the chest, that's going to get his attention. Yeah. You know, that's a way to be like, hey, I don't like you, jerk. Yeah. You punch him in the head, it's intent to injure.
Oh, it is. It's almost Sean Avery-esque, right, in the sense that there's the line, and you think you're towing it, Yeah. But you're like a mile past it. You're way past that line. And that's kind of where that situation started. The game, Brad was like on the line doing, you know, hitting the puck off of Jari's stick and the Crosby incident. But the end of the game, you're Sean Avery. You're way past there. And guess who likes Sean Avery? Absolutely. I can't say that word. Nobody.
Oh, well, let's wrap this up with something a little bit more exciting. Yeah. Something that's coming up tomorrow as time of recording. I know this is a hockey podcast. Guys, girls, people, please grant me this. My good man, Matthew Stafford, is in the Super Bowl tomorrow. Ty, who do you like? Who are you cheering for?
It's going to hurt me choosing the other guys because I see the Stafford jersey and I see the love and the passion you have for your Detroit Lions and their former players. But I'm going with Joey Ice, Joey Burr. I got the Burrow, man. I think, you know, watching him last game, a huge Chiefs fan, and, you know, he saved the entire world from watching Jackson Mahomes and Brittany Matthews do more TikTok dances. But so I have respect for them already. Now I want to see Joey Burr take that Super Bowl. I want to see him take that next step and really cement himself as a solid top five quarterback up and coming in the NFL. We're already graced with players like Justin Herbert and Patrick Mahomes and Matthew Stafford, and Joey Burr's getting there. So yeah, I'm going to go 24-21 Bengals.
With the score myself. Oh man. See, I'm really excited for the Super Bowl because Matthew Stafford's getting that opportunity that I wish he could have done with the Lions. And hey, you know, maybe he still will get that opportunity. But tomorrow is with the Rams. I think the Rams is a relatively classy organization. I'm a big Matt Stafford fan. I'm obviously pulling for them, but there's a lot of parallels with what Detroit is looking to do with what Cincy has done. And not just the fact that they're both large cats on their jerseys. Joe Burrow is awesome. Joe Burrow is great football. You know, he's got a fantastic personality. Yeah. He's just dynamite on the field. There's nothing to be upset about. I feel like this is a win-win. I want Stafford to win, but it's not like he's going up against a villain like Tom Brady or going up against Patrick Mahomes, who I'm starting to turn on a little bit. You know, you can, if your brother's a jerk and your, you know, longtime partner is kind of a jerk, I feel like maybe you're a jerk. So I don't know. I'm sorry, Patrick, if that's unfair, but when you surround yourself with people like that, that's what people assume about you. So I think that no matter what, we get a great story. We either get Matthew Stafford finally proving himself in this way that, you know, a lot of Detroit fans and some people would say he always was this quarterback, but this is that opportunity now where he can do this. Or we get Joe Burrow. We get the new class. We're in the post Brady era now, and we get kind of a new challenger for that throne. So I think it's great. I'm excited. I think it's going to be a really fun game. I think both teams are going to be ready to sling it, and I think they both have a lot of creativity that we're going to see some great plays out there. I'm going Rams. I'm going to say 34-21 Rams.
High scoring game.
Hey.
Be awesome.
They don't call him the Cowboy for nothing, you know. They're gonna be flinging that ball. The chains are gonna be off. They're not gonna be worried. I've seen Sean McVay. I don't want to go down to this rabbit hole too long because we are a hockey podcast, but I'm a pretty big football guy too, American football. Sean McVay has been kind of given Matthew Stafford a short leash. It cost them the last game of the season against the Niners. It almost cost them against the Niners again. It almost cost them against Tom Brady and the Bucks. But I feel like with all that stuff out of the way and with you know, looking at that, I think we're going to get to see some real great Matt Stafford moments. Cooper Kupp is going to be catching a lot of balls and doing a lot out there. So I'm excited. Can't wait. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, halftime show should be amazing as well. I'm just saying, that's a star-studded halftime show. Eminem, Dr. Dre, Kendrick Lamar. If you're into that music like I am, it's going to be wicked. Mary J. Blige, love it.
Yeah, it's going to be great. It's going to be great. We'll have a lot more hockey for you guys next week. I will either be probably still riding the high of my good man Matt Stafford winning it, or maybe looking for some distractions to you know, pick me up out of my depression. But we'll see. But
you're deep in it, right? Because New Jersey like crushed St. Louis this past week.
Hockey wins and losses aren't the same. They don't hit the same.
It's true. 82
games in a season, bro. Like, it's, come on. Like, you don't worry about that stuff. Everybody has their off nights. Everybody has, it's all good.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's unfortunately another nail in old Binner's casket. Like, he's, his resume is not looking as good lately. And I don't know. If Husso keeps playing well the way he does, we could see maybe Binnington playing for a new team next year. And Husso getting the deal in St. Louis. I think there's a lot of teams out there that would be willing to take a chance at Binnington for reasonably, like, he's getting like 5.5 for the next couple of years, Stanley Cup winning goaltender. A lot of desperate teams out there that'd be willing to go for that, I think.
Solid cap, and he can rebound. He can rebound.
Yeah, it's not. I'm not writing him off yet. Husso's doing well. We're still got it. Can't wait.
Can't wait.
All right, gang. We'll wrap it there. Thank you very much for joining us again. If you're watching us on YouTube, if you're not, feel free to check us out. See our handsome faces on there and our colorful backgrounds. See my gorgeous plant wall. Yeah. If you're not, check us out on YouTube or the Mitts Twigs podcast channel. Find us anywhere on. You can find a podcast audio. We're on Apple. We're on Spotify. Boo, Spotify. No, right? But we're on there for now. Google, I'm pretty sure we're on. We're everywhere. Find us on Twitter at Headspock. Yeah, I think that's it. I think that's all of our socials.
Yeah, leave a like. Leave a comment if you can on some, certain platforms. Let us know how you're doing. If you even tweet at us. Tell us what you like, what you don't like. We're pretty active on there this past week. I've been a little taking care of a little fam, but I haven't been as active on there. But yeah, let us know how we're doing. Love to hear from you guys.
Just with those likes, those subscribes, those mentions, share it. Share us everywhere, gang. We appreciate it. We're going to keep bringing it to you whether you like it or not. So might as well start liking it. on that terrible note, I'm Mitts. He's Twigs. Thank you all so much. Have a wonderful week. Peace out.